Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Progressive Britain podcast. This is a podcast that believes that progressive politics can change the world. I'm your host, Hannah Shah. Today, I'm joined by my colleague, email writer-in-chief. Sorry, I had a very, very early morning this morning in the radio. Stefan Rolnick for this week's extra show. Stefan, how's it going?
Yeah, really good. I've had a really good week. I've had one of those rare weeks where I actually somehow managed to get some reading done. And I've been...
Look at you.
I know, I've been dipping into an old book I borrowed from a friend, which was Jess Phillips's book, Every Woman. It's a really good read, super quick. I'm flying through it. And I love how clear it is. When you read it, you can literally hear her voice, which I think is like such a good marker of a good writer and a really clear thinker. It's super funny. It's super educational. It's a bit of a random plug since it came out a while ago. But if any of you still haven't read it, I would massively recommend. And I guess
haven't people also said that it's being touted as a possible TV series as well?
Yeah, I have heard stuff about.
Have I missed that?
I have heard stuff on Twitter about somebody's bought the rights to a life story, which is quite a mad situation.
That's how you know you've made it.
I reckon it'll be up there with Chernobyl, which, as we know, was rated the highest rated TV show on IMDb. But I mean, one of the main themes.
Wait, what are you saying about Jess's life story?
That it's radioactive with ideas. Okay, I don't know. Moving on. One of the main things about Jess Phillips's book is that she speaks a lot of truth to power. And some of the people that have been speaking truth to power and will be speaking truth to power today are the climate activists. So we're going to talk about that today.
Yeah, we are. I've also just come back from a great Labour Together event about climate change, where I spent the morning chatting to loads of people from climate groups, from all across the Labour family. Obviously, we've had the Rachel Reeves announcement that people from a bunch of select committees are going to start writing a whole climate change strategy, which is really important.
Can we go back and explain that? So it's the select committees, which, to be clear, select committees are those kind of really, no offence to everyone we know who is on one, dull looking.
They're not dull if you're a policy nerd like me.
MPs sit in a semicircle and they get experts to come in and talk about their subject. And Rachel Reeves has got a group of select committees.
They're
on
like
stuff
nerd like circles.
Nerd circles, from business to energy to all these different things.
Health.
To come and talk about having a citizens' assembly on climate change. And right,
exactly.
Citizens' assemblies are like when democracy sets up a WhatsApp group and invites the public. And so they'll be going around asking the public for their ideas. But today is...
Except it's a private WhatsApp group. You're allocated by lot, all right? Not everyone can turn up.
Yeah. But today is the climate strikes.
Yeah. We've got more school climate strikes today. And actually, I think that's why the announcement was so good. It feels like the climate movement has really gripped people's attention. We can see, you know, from the TV and things like Action on Plastics to the move by Rachel Reeves and the select committees. And we know that the Climate Coalition and Green UK have conducted some research that shows that nearly 70% of people now want urgent political action on climate change. Now, we were talking this morning about how we create the political will to act on climate change. And to be honest, loads of the people there, and they're like hardcore climate activists, they devote their life to this, were pretty pessimistic, but think that there is a small chance that we can make some change. Do you feel like the momentum is finally starting to build in a way that matches the horrendous scale of the problem?
I think the difficulty with building momentum is that you rarely build enthusiasm for solving a problem based on fear, right? Fear tends to make us move inwards, we freeze and we don't act. And I think one of the struggles with the climate change problem is to understand the severity of it and the danger that we're in means overcoming one of the kind of most fundamental things about being human, that is when we're faced with news as bad as this, our brains are wired not to come to terms with it. So the question has always been, can you truly understand the extent of the problem and be motivated to do something about it? Because once you truly understand it, your instant emotion is despair. I think lots of people deserve credit for this. I think it is mainly the young people who have hit the streets and made the case for this through direct action. Mm. But one of the really interesting things, if we're talking about political messaging, and you know, Bill Clinton had many faults, but one of the things that he talked about when he talked about climate action was actually seeing this thing as an adventure and not something to be scared of. You know, everyone wants to go on an adventure. You know, sometimes I like to go to Kew Gardens.
Particularly if it doesn't end up in like a sort of post-apocalyptic wasteland where we're all fighting each other for food, right?
Right, exactly. And I think actually that, you know, millennials often get kind of, you know, labeled as people that have very bleak humor, but that's what we're going to need to get through this, because essentially
pretty much.
And I think this is the problem, is speaking to a lot of open-minded progressive people who believe us on this issue and want us to act on this issue. There's a difference between believing it and having that energy and that urgency to act. And for me, that energy and urgency to act has come from understanding that the reason when I don't feel urgency about this, that is my brain playing a trick on me. And I think the second thing is realizing that, you know, the difference between tweaking this problem is a difference between our great-grandchildren having to, you know, move because of climate disaster, or our grandchildren having to move because of climate disaster. Mm. And to be honest, I'd rather neither of them had to do move. It.
Yeah.
So I think once you viscerally understand that this is something that will be happening during our lifetime and is a problem of now, there was a brilliant woman on the Tory leadership debates on the BBC who was asking a question, a young person who made this point. This is not a problem of tomorrow, it's a problem of now. And once you understand that, going out, leaving school for a day and sitting down in front of Parliament makes total sense.
Exactly. I think one thing I want to quickly add is we talk a lot in this podcast about like how politics has changed and it seems to become far more extreme, and we've seen a polarization and a move towards nationalism and the backlash we haven't seen before. But actually it's this urgency and this fear, and part of the thing, like we talk about automation as a challenge and the future, but actually the fact that climate, like we are in a climate crisis, causes people to sort of rush into the arms of authoritarianism. Like we talked a lot about eco-fascism being a thing. We're like, let's find a benevolent dictator, let's sort it out. But also to a really scary, we had the conversation and someone turned to me and said, you know, 15 years ago, I was writing and I was talking about a situation where because of the climate, people would be drowning crossing the Mediterranean. And we all thought that by which he meant, you know, the public would be shocked and horrified and wouldn't let it happen. But what we've seen, 2,000 people die crossing the Mediterranean in as many, more like a year or two. And it just drops off our radar. And we know, like, we thought that we'd never see the kind of aggressive nationalism that led to World War II again. But look at the rise of Trump, look at the rise of Golden Dawn, look at the rise of fascists, like left, right and centre, to be honest. And that's really scary. Let's move on to government action, though, unless you've got something to say.
No, absolutely.
It's been a pretty mixed bag. I mean, the government has said they'll commit to zero carbon emissions by 2050. So climate activists want that to be 2025, but 2050 is a good start. And that would fulfill our global obligations. But at the same time, the plan's been criticised for not having enough detail. And the Tory leadership contenders, you know, were called out this week on the BBC for not being really ambitious enough with it. I mean, the planet is dying, guys. So how do we make the case that only progressives can truly take on this problem?
Well, I think there's two things. I think there's a progressive specific argument, and then there's a kind of Labour specific argument. In that progressive specific argument, I think there's two elements. I think because of the extreme nature of this problem, progressives and people on the centre left have kind of struggled to find our particular language on this. We've struggled to work out where our seat at the table is on this. And I think it's two things. I think the first thing is that, you know, we here at Progress, our commitment to progressive values is born out of a sense of urgency and a sense of pragmatism. Actually, the urgency of all these different problems in our society require pragmatism. And fundamentally, we've said it before on this podcast, there is nothing pragmatic about not having a planet to live on. All the changes we want to make, all the ways we want to reform the world we live in, can't be done if the planet is underwater.
Yeah, you can't tinker with anything. We've got nothing to tinker with.
And I think the second thing is, you mentioned about, you know, this lurching to the extremes on both sides and the eco-fascism and stuff. I think, you know, often these movements to kind of bring this to our attention are inherently disruptive, and they should be, because then we notice and these climate strikes fulfill that. But actually what this needs as well, and some of the stuff we've seen in Parliament around citizens' assemblies points to this, is you need something to build something up as well. You can't just bring the system down.
Exactly.
You have to build something up in its place. And a lot of the talk about the Green New Deal is really, really fundamentally about that. And actually, as progressives, we have a role to say, saying, actually, we have a duty to look at the detail on this and let us kind of help create that future. And fundamentally, the Labour argument on this is about power. This is about a group of wealthy people. There was a really interesting thing, and I know we're going to have to move on in a sec, but there was a really interesting thing. I was hearing about how oil companies, when they were the first ones to learn that fossil fuels were going to lead to global heating, they kind of had to make a decision. They said, like, you know, do we adapt to this or do we double down and start a propaganda campaign? And what they did was they doubled down and started a propaganda campaign. But at that time when they were building new oil wells, I think the thing that really summarized just how messed up this is that they started to build the oil infrastructure that goes in the sea at a slightly higher height to account for sea level rises, right? And that what that says to me is, look, not only can we build this higher so we're not affected by the sea level rise in our work, the people behind that won't be affected by the sea level rises either, because they'll have enough money to protect their children. And I think that is the Labour argument.
At risk of sounding sort of too, you know, into collective action, there is certainly, and we had a conversation about the individual versus the collective, and it's definitely the case that the way our economy is structured rewards oil companies for making those choices, right? Rewards them, rewards their shareholders, rewards executives, exactly, people who don't live in Mauritius and are going to have their houses flooded, people who aren't going to starve because they can't afford food on the world food markets. And these are all things. And actually, another thing is nation states, right? Nation states are going to act in a really self-interested way. Like, Russia's going to say climate change is a thing, but actually we feel like we've got a right to continue to pollute because we're the last people standing, and that's fine. And we can sort of end up in this weird Hobbesian nightmare if we don't, like, start creating
weird
coalition.
Weird Hobbesian nightmare.
I feel like we're already there. Let's be honest.
I'm not sure I understand what that is, but, you know, I'm into it. I just wanted to...
Yeah, no, go
also
on.
Just to add to that, when you're talking about what roles the progressives have to play here, I mean, this is the argument that people across our party are making to Jeremy Corbyn right now on Brexit, is that, look, we understand that staying in the EU isn't going to solve all our problems, and it's really important that Labour is uniquely placed to make the austerity argument. But let's not lie to ourselves. If we go off on our own and create a Green New Deal, I mean, that is not going to solve the problem, because goes above, and actually the EU is uniquely placed to do that. And we had Seb Dance on the podcast before the European elections, and he made this argument brilliantly, which all these things we want to do needs the European Union, which leads us
beautifully
into Labour and Brexit.
Labour and Brexit. So Labour had a cabinet meeting on Wednesday about Brexit. Here in my notes, it just says, what was decided? What does it mean? Looking into our big progress-shaped crystal ball, what was decided? What does it mean?
Well, there's been a lot of back and forth on Twitter about, was it significant? Was it not significant? People, I think often factional politics gets kind of in the way of this discussion, and people start questioning motivations. And actually, I think this issue is too important to do that. So I think we need to look at what was said. What was essentially said is that we need a public vote on any Brexit deal, which is what we wanted, which is what Labour members clearly said they would like on our conference policy. It also said there had to be real choices on the ballot paper, which has been interpreted to mean Remain will be on the ballot paper, which I think makes sense. And I think we should afford the leadership some good faith on that, that is important and that does live up to what we want. But Tom Watson has been making this argument really clearly, and he's kind of been banging his head against the wall, and he makes it so well and so clearly, which is, you know, Labour needs to commit to being the party of Remain, and that is what I think you've been doing with the Labour Say campaign.
And I think more importantly than that is that Labour at its core is the party of Remain, right? The majority of our MPs, the majority of our membership are all people who adhere to our internationalist values and who see the EU as a fundamental expression of those values. I think that's really, really important. And I think what the next step is not only to say, yes, we need to commit to a confirmatory public vote, so a vote on any final Brexit deal, whatever that looks like, and obviously for Parliament to decide what options are on the ballot paper, but also for us to campaign actively for Remain and to make those internationalist arguments, like freedom of movement. Why is freedom of movement important? Like, if we don't say that we value migrants from other countries and we don't value their cultural value as well as their economic value, as well as immigration as a sort of moral good, then who will make that argument? Yeah. And I think we're ceding ground to the people who want to take our politics to the extreme if we don't do that.
And we are
running out of time.
I just want to quickly add to that. I think obviously this issue has divided our country right down the middle. And I think people have accused, you know, those who want to take a side on this as only being for one half of the country. Mm. Whereas, you know, people who haven't taken a side of this are saying that, you know, we're for the whole country. Just make a clear point. Labour being the party of Remain is not the same as Labour being the party of Remainers.
Yeah.
This is an issue with, unfortunately, because our country has been divided in this way, two clear sides. And on one side sits Boris Johnson and Nigel Farage. And on the other side sits progressive people of all stripes. And I think it's really important that arguments are coming from different parts of the party, that we can't just be the party of Remainers. Mm. But actually, I think what Tom Watson and many other people, like especially Jess Phillips, trying to do on this, is working out how we become the party of Remain whilst also being a party for the whole country.
I think being the party of Remain does not necessarily mean you accept everything the EU does without change, right? There is definitely a Remain and reform agenda that says we need to think about how the EU develops and changes as an international organisation to face the problems of the future, like climate change. Last thing, now we're recording this before the very final Tory leadership vote.
So yeah, we're
in the podcast bunker.
We are in the podcast bunker. Rory Stewart fell last night as we're recording this.
I was really sad about that.
RIP the Sag. He fell earlier today as kind of more votes were swept up actually by Michael Gove. So at this stage, Michael Gove is just ahead of Jeremy Hunt with Johnson right out in front.
So I predicted this and everyone said it would be Jeremy, be very careful about this, Jeremy Hunt. But I don't really know why I'm cheering for Michael Gove. I think if you're a progressive at this point, it's like Dumb or Dumber.
Yeah, I think just, you know, and like you said, we've got to wrap this up pretty quickly. Currently, we don't know whether Michael Gove or Jeremy Hunt will be in the final two. All I'd like to say on that is there's people on Twitter who are talking about how great it'll be if it's Gove versus Johnson, as if this is just like some Shakespearean drama that's like playing out for our enjoyment. And look, this is interesting.
To be honest, at least we get some fun out of it.
Well, exactly. I mean, it is interesting and there are interesting characters and it can be light relief. And you know, I do it as well. I've been writing on my email as if this is a horse race as well. Yeah. I'm not blind to
like
that.
Love Island for politics nerds.
Yeah, but let's just remember that while this might feel like we're watching the Hunger Games, like actually these people in their different positions and their different leadership skills are going to really affect people's lives. It's just a shame that none of them seem to have it.
And I'm just going to say, I imagine leadership skills is in air quotes for all of you listening at home.
Very much.
All right, just before we wrap up, you've got a lovely little note here which says, on a less bleak note, and I think since we have Johnson and Gove that we've just discussed, we should mention it. Now, there was a study conducted by Beano. I remember the Beano.
Yeah.
Dennis the Menace, who was very mean and very nice stripy top.
To be clear, Dennis the Menace did not conduct this study. I believe it. The CEO is the spokesperson for the study.
Is Dennis the Menace the spokesperson, though?
No.
And it's about Gen Alpha, who are children under 10. So what about these children under 10 that Dennis the Menace did not survey?
There's a study that's been done on Generation Alpha and people can go online and look them up. It was on the Daily Email earlier this week, which, by the way, you should all go and subscribe to. It's like the news, but with a BS filter. I think we're allowed to say that. But basically, this is the new generation, I think, beneath Generation Z. And, you know, it's looking really good. They're all more politically engaged than ever. They're less concerned about, you know, things like gender and, you know, all these different divides that exist in our society. And they've got a kind of much more fluid view of the world, which is opening them up to things like going out and taking climate action at an age where I was actually probably reading Dennis the Menace and not outside campaigning against
reading
climate change.
Reading the Beano, you say. Okay, great. Thanks, Stefan. Obviously, if you have any friends who aren't subscribed to this, what are you doing? Please send it their way.
They don't have any friends, so you need to do that for us.
Please. I definitely don't at this point. Meantime, subscribe, rate, review, and hope that those lovely Gen Alpha kids don't have an eco-fascist wasteland to grow up in. Have a lovely weekend.
Great.
You've been listening to the Progressive Britain podcast. The music was When in the West by Blue Dot Sessions, licensed under Creative Commons, and many thanks for our fantastic and long-suffering producer, Caroline Crampton.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.